American Transmission Company and Xcel Energy have asked the PSC for permission to build the Badger Cooley transmission line. It would run from Holman in La Crosse County to Middleton in Dane County. It would cost between $540 million and $580 million and carry 340,000 volts of electricity. Wisconsin Eye wants to thank these five panelists for discussing the line. To my left, Sarah Justice, spokesperson for American Transmission Company, Rob Danielson, secretary, Save Our Unique Lands, Beth Soholt, executive director, Wind on the Wires, Deb Severson, steering committee for the Citizens for Energy Task Force, and Daniel Klein, director of Strategic Transmission Initiatives, Xcel Energy. Thanks, everybody, coming in to talk about a project that, you know, we're not going to resolve today, but maybe we can stir some public information. Here's what I found with a panel with so much talent on it. So nobody gets lost and has to wait a few minutes to talk. I'm interested in just a two or three sentence summary of your views on Badger Cooley and why. Just two or three sentences. Sarah.
Well, representing American Transmission Company, we're one of the co-applicants, along with Xcel Energy, who have submitted this application to the Public Service Commission, and we believe it's an important project, provides a lot of benefits to ratepayers in Wisconsin, and we're going to be working through the regulatory process along with Xcel, with Public Service Commission and members of the public in the coming months.
Nice timing. Rob.
I'm with the Soul of Wisconsin, and basically we have been involved in the review process for about 4 years or so, and it's exciting to finally be involved in a publicly accountable phase in the review process. We think that there needs to be an extremely active evaluation of all of the energy options. The public has had 3 or 4 years of public relations information from the utilities. They're under the impression that there's only going to be a high voltage transmission line somewhere, and that's not true. Their state laws require that we have a very thorough analysis of all the energy options, and we are here to make sure that happens.
Thanks, Rob. Beth?
Thank you. Wind on the Wires has been working on transmission for wind development for 13 years, and the Badger Cooley line is needed for existing wind farms and for future development.
Okay. Deb?
Yes, I'm with Citizens Energy Task Force, and we've been highly involved in transmission throughout the Midwest. My belief is that transmission, transmitting centrally generated electrons, be they fossil fuels or renewables, creates national security and reliability issues. We've known this since the 1970s. Transmission lines like the Badger Cooley line serve to help utilities protect a very antiquated centralized system and make significant money by doing so. I think it's time that we change.
Thanks. Daniel.
Well, thank you, Steve, and thanks for pulling this panel together. I believe that Badger Cooley is the right project for the region. It's going to help Wisconsin and the broader region achieve a number of energy policy goals. And like Sarah said, we're just looking forward to getting the formal regulatory process started.
Well, now I look forward to a very informal discussion on perhaps the heart of it. Why is the Badger Cooley line proposed and needed or not needed? What happens if it's not built? And what are some options? And I don't care who goes first. Let's just have a pretty informal discussion. So
Steve, the region has been working on transmission planning for a number of years, as the utilities can elaborate on. But as far as public policy and renewables go, we've been involved in transmission planning since 2003. And the Badger Cooley line is a result of a very staged and planful process that has happened over a number of years. And it will enable, along with the other lines in the multi-value portfolio from MISO, it will enable renewables that are currently in law requirements for each state to be met. Without additional transmission capacity, we have a glass ceiling for renewables that we just can't break through.
Okay. Thank you. Next on the overarching questions.
I'll talk about the need question. I'd like to come back, of course, to the renewable energy question and the measurables and how we know what the benefits actually are. But basically, I think that right now our perception of the societal need that we have for electricity is undergoing a major overhaul. We look at like population growth, and we tend to think that, you know, people have good and bad energy use habits, and somehow we default to the idea that we're always going to be needing more electricity. And that turns out is simply not the case anymore. from 2007, our residential electricity use in the United States has hit a plateau, and it's now decreasing at a steady rate. Not because of the slowed economy, as many people presume, but because of the increasing efficiency of the appliances that we are buying through federal policy, and because of the ability to states to shift funds that in the past went towards infrastructure like transmission and power plants into end-user benefits that reduce energy use. So I think basically there's no way to justify at this point in time to tie up ratepayer dollars for the next 40 years inflexibly, high interest rates going to finance industry, when we can take the less amount of money and invest that in end-user benefits that return the dollars to our communities and sustain lower use indefinitely.
Well, let's go point counterpoint. Daniel or Sarah, want to respond to Rao?
Sure. A couple of points I would add to that. First of all, when we look at demand, we don't look at what I would consider short term, even back to 2007 in utility terms, that's a shorter term. We look at longer term trends and projections. And at ATC, as a transmission provider, we look to the local energy companies to help inform the overall look at what's happening in the future. Demand actually is not going down. It's growing at a slower rate. Economy is part of that. Changes in things like appliances and energy usage is also part of that. You also have newer technologies like electric cars. You know, there's on both sides. So we do constantly look at demand in a very long-term forecast. But that's only one piece of the puzzle. So when we look at a line like Badger Cooley, there are multiple benefits that it can provide. So it's not just solely about demand and what the use is in the next 5 years, 10 years, because we are looking out very long term. But we also look at transmission as being able to provide other benefits like access to renewable energy, like Beth talked about, and also access to lower cost energy by improving access to the market. And that's where MISO, you'll hear that referred to a lot,
yes,
comes in. MISO is a Midwest regional operator that looks over the entire region.
11 states,
exactly, and one province of Canada. So the planning for this project, while we're talking about impacts in Wisconsin, is really much more about a regional policy planning that goes in the very long term and a long view of all of these things, demand, renewables, access to renewables, and access to lower cost power.
Now, Deb and Daniel, I don't want to cut you off.
I'd like to address that.
Unless your points have been made. Go ahead.
One of the points on demand that we've noticed is that in Wisconsin, according to the Strategic Energy Assessment, Xcel Energy and Dairyland Power Cooperative, who will both be owning Badger Cooley and are co-owners of CapEx 2020, have actually reduced their ability to use demand response, which shaves peak demand to zero in 2012. And so that's artificially inflating the demand growth that's going on. In terms of saving ratepayers' money, the most cost-effective way to save money is through energy efficiency and conservation. We also know that the plans, you're right, this has been planned for quite some time. If you actually go back to some of the beginning planning, in 2001, the Lignite Coal Board in North Dakota determined that the best way to keep the 800 years of lignite coal alive in North Dakota and the coal and generation resources was through adding transmission. I agree, renewables are great in terms of helping reduce our carbon footprint. But again, the best way to reduce our carbon footprint is through energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. And renewables implemented on a local basis avoid the need for regional transmission.
Oh, I want to give Dan a chance to bat cleanup if Beth has a PS on that.
Yeah, and Beth, I'll let you weigh in if you have a PS. But one point that I would like to make is that energy efficiency programs in Wisconsin are managed centrally. They're not managed on an individual company basis like some other states may be. So that's one important point to remember as we're talking about energy efficiency as an alternative. The companies in Wisconsin sort of pay into or buy into the Wisconsin-wide program that's managed centrally. The other point I'd like to make is that since 2008, no new coal plant has come online, and I don't think that there's any significant coal plant that is working its way through the MISO process at this time too. So I don't think that coal as a long-term future is really in the cards. And I know President Obama is announcing today a new
carbon limits on
coal policy. Plants. So
yes,
mm-hmm. Steve, I think it's actually important for your viewers to know that I actually agree with all of the things that have been said. The system is changing. We are going to see more distributed resources at the local level, but we've worked hard to take the ore out of it. It's not central station or distributed. It's some of both. We're progressing to a cleaner mix of energy. But for the wind farms, you can't energy efficiency your way out of the need for transmission. If you produce in a certain area and you can't use the energy locally, it needs to be distributed and delivered. You need a road to market for that wind. And so you have to transmit it to the places where it can be used. That's not in lieu of doing things locally, and I think Wisconsin and the surrounding states have a lot to do on the distributed side. But we're going to need all of it if we're actually replacing coal.
Can I ask quickly about an option that was raised by, I think, the town of Holland? The town of Holland officials raised a perspective. Can't we just bury these lines underground? I don't know anything about the subject, but who can answer that question? Sarah?
Sure. Yeah, it's a question we get often. And with some lower voltage lines, they can be done. And you typically will see it in a very dense urban area where you don't have wide open right-of-ways, downtown Madison, downtown Milwaukee, mm-hmm. but those are typically going to be your lower voltage lines. Okay. At this voltage, 345 kV, which I like to liken to the interstate size of transmission, it's not done very often, and where it is done, it's in very, very small segments at a very high cost, and that's typically for a very specific right-of-way constraint. So when we look at long lines like this one, and people ask about underground, and I understand why they do, there are limitations in the technology, in the dissipation of the heat. These lines up in the air dissipate heat into the air. Mm-hmm. The cost is a huge factor in it. It can be, you know, 5 to 10 times as much money to bury a line like this underground.
5 or 10
times.
Okay.
And it also, from a reliability standpoint, brings a lot of concern because when we have a problem with an overhead line, we're typically going to have that repaired under 24 hours, sometimes under a few hours. If we have a problem on an underground line, having to find it, dig it up, repair it, looking at the benefits of this project to, you know, access to market, access to renewables, and some reliability benefits, all of these things compound into it doesn't make sense from a reliability, a fiscal standpoint. But ultimately, that's really the Public Service Commission's domain as well, is to consider all sorts of alternatives, whether it be route alternatives, overhead underground, need for the project. That's where the regulators come in to make that decision, what's in the interest of ratepayers.
Rob, you had a good idea. You wanted to add to the subject that we get to. How does Badger Cooley fit into the long-term energy planning for Wisconsin? Why do you think that's an important thing for us to touch on today?
It's very important, and we will touch upon it in terms of the cost. The Badger Cooley proposal is one of 8 lines that have been announced by utilities for the state of Wisconsin as part of a complete new energy direction built on top of a robust system that we have been our number one energy investment since 2007 in Wisconsin. So we have a robust working transmission system. This is a layer, state-to-state, interstate layer that's on top, and it basically could become the number one energy investment for us for the next 40, 50 years. So basically what we do is look at what's going on in other states and say, all right, it's a ton of money. What should we do? It's an investment. All of this is paid for by ratepayers. All right, so what do we want? Benefits do we want from this? Soul of Wisconsin is absolutely grounded in the idea that energy planning should be done on the basis of ratepayer priorities because we pay for it. Okay, so we find when we go to town governments, we're really lucky we go to diverse town governments, we go to meet with civic groups, and we hear consensus around 3 goals, very broad social range around 3 goals. One is that people want to keep their home, farm, and business expenses low, and they know that they need to do that by reducing energy use. A lot of farms in Wisconsin, for example, operate on single-phase power. Put a 3-phase motor inside of pumps and fans and all that kind of stuff, incredible increases. Number 2 is, believe it or not, they prefer energy efficiency as a number 1 investment. not just because of the cost, but in rural communities and also more and more in urban settings, we realize that the best way to have a strong local economy is to take those ratepayer dollars and circle those back into the community so that they serve that community and that local economy. Number three is this notion of energy self-sufficiency, which has a lot of different ways that people can do it. But solar is exploding at a rate like we have never seen before. In Vernon County last month, we sold out 1,001 solar panels in less than 2 weeks. Not because of the carbon emissions, but because of the positive impacts that it would have on people's utility bills for the next 25 years. That is long-term planning. You put that together with energy efficiency, you have an explosion. We can't ask the utilities, because they're driven by profits and things like that, or they're not necessarily consistent with everything that we want to do on an individual level. But if we have personal and community goals that we want to reach, we can achieve those in a kind of new, amazing way of thinking about energy management as like an aesthetic. People really get excited about when they start to see that electric bill coming down, when they start watching their meters every day because of the solar power that's being generated. There's a transformation in society, and it will take a transformation like that in an individual level first to drive change on the maximal level.
The next thing we're going to get to is routes, but does anybody want to quickly respond to anything that?
Yes, I'd like to build on that. Wisconsin used to lead the nation in integrated resource planning, looking at all energy solutions. We no longer do this. In fact, in early stages of the Badger-Cooley line, we asked ATC to look at alternatives and do a cost-benefit analysis, and we were told it was beyond the scope of the project. You know, there's a flaw in that. Our Public Service Commission seems to agree. We filed a request to reopen the CapEx 2020 docket with relevant new information that showed that the line was not needed. They ignored the citizens' request to do this. At the same time, we've seen the Public Service Commission cut focus on energy funding for solar photovoltaics on rooftops. So, you know, we don't have a mix, and it appears we do have a very significant bias towards transmission.
Okay.
Steve, I actually agree with what both Deb and Rob have said. We're going to need a lot more energy efficiency, and we're going to need more flexible resources. And so as we move towards more and more clean energy, the demand response and the ways of generating different kinds of energy at a local level and at traditional through traditional ways, those are going to become more integrated and more important. And so, again, it's not either or. It's we're going to have a lot of both.
Okay. Well, let's move to talk about the two identified routes. And we're going to show a graphic of the proposed routes. My narrative here is, my source on this is from the Center for Rural Affairs. One of the routes would go, follow I-94 from northern Dane County, Black River Falls, west to Blair and then south to Holman, follow an existing corridor of transmission lines with already established easements, 90% of the corridor. The alternate route would go north along the interstate to Portage, northwest along Highway 16, at Linden Station, go west through Elroy, Cashton, north to Rockland, and west along I-90 to Onalaska and Holman. This would go through Wisconsin Dells, and according to, again, my source, the Center for Rural Affairs, only 60% of this route follows existing corridors, although this would be shorter and less expensive. There, I've told you all I know about the routes. Who wants to explain the impact of the routes? Go ahead, Rob.
Well, first of all, we've seen these pictures quite prominently in the newspaper articles and stuff for 4 years. We just began the public review process stuff, and we can actually have input for each of us, whether we're ratepayers, whether we're landowners, whether we're residents, whether we visit the area, whether we everywhere in Wisconsin will be paying for the whatever energy solution gets chosen. These maps and ones like them are mailed out to ratepayers and land and mostly specific landowners within, and they have just a plethora of possible options in there. And the landowner gets this map and they look at it and they say, whoa, this is very serious. There's going to be a transmission line am I somewhere around here. And that is completely wrong. There is no statement in any of the mailings that go forth from the utilities that say that the need for the high voltage transmission option has not been determined. and that there are other energy options that state law requires to be considered. This is a fundamental liberty that is given to our utilities right now in Wisconsin that basically disengages ratepayers and landowners and everyone that needs to be part of this very important energy decision direction for Wisconsin from the entire process.
But I'm going to show my ignorance here. And yes. It seems to me that at some point, PSC and ATC has to identify potential routes, and that's what they've done. Potential. Did
but
you hear me?
About
potential.
One option.
I understand.
He's only talking about one option.
Okay, but I want to give somebody else to talk about the potential routes, maybe.
Sure. Yep. A couple points I'd like to make. As you'll see on a timeline, I believe you'll show later, we started this in 2010 with the utility-hosted open houses. So these are the informational meetings and the mailings that Rob is referring to. And we send those out to the public, to the media, put them on the website, send them out to stakeholders of other groups, all in an effort to make people aware of the plans that we have to propose a transmission line. When they come to the open house, yes, there are maps with lines all over them, and that's because, unlike you might have seen 20, 30, 40 years ago, where a utility just said, we're building X and here it is, it's the straightest line possible, A to B, mm-hmm. and we're going forward with this, we come out early, ATC and Xcel engage the public to say, we have to get from A to B, and yes, we did have a specific proposal. Yes, we are talking about that, but when people come to the open house, and we had thousands, literally thousands of people come through and talk to us, it's not just me, or it's not just Dan, or somebody with an expertise in routing. We have all of our planners there, our environmental staff, our regulatory staff, all focused to talk about different aspects of our project. So we are talking about the need. We are answering questions about alternatives, and there are alternatives in our application for the PSC to study, as is required. So there's a cumulative process that's going on here. We're now to the regulatory phase where all of that work gets reviewed. Up until then, it was the applicants doing the work that we felt was necessary, not just the required, going beyond required work to involve the public.
Can I ask a stupid question? These potential routes, have they been identified by the PSC or by Xcel and ATC? What's the source of these?
They are identified by Xcel and ATC. So we went through a process to engage the public and understand the impacts of different potential routes, came down to a proposal that we then made two different alternatives, which is required. Now the PSC will evaluate those, and they will make a decision if they agree the project's necessary, what route would go forward.
Then it's clear to say that the PSC in no way at this moment has signed off on these routes.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you have a PS on the issue of routes, Daniel?
I had a PS.
Go ahead.
In part, it touches on a little bit of all of this. One thing that's important to remember is part of the reason why, in addition to independent study work conducted by ATC and Xcel Energy, MISO, the grid operator that we referenced earlier, determined through its own study that the most efficient way to deliver renewable energy to consumers is through a combination of resources located more distant in the most efficient wind resource areas and solar areas and such, and local resources located in the cities and towns that they'll serve. So that the combination of those two is the most efficient. And when you access the remote resources, which is less expensive, you need a little bit of transmission in order to be able to deliver that power to consumers. And this is one of those projects that's needed.
Deb, did you have a PS before I asked Beth to talk about the wind aspect?
MISO just last week in a transmission case in Minnesota acknowledged that MVP projects, which is multi-value projects like the Badger Coulee, are primarily about baseload energy where fossil fuels will be the primary benefit. We also know that MISO started out as a transmission planner. And in talking with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, one of the most significant problems they're having with these regional transmission planners is that they are not giving equal focus to non-transmission alternatives that can be more environmentally and economically sustainable.
Beth, I'm intrigued by the renewable aspect, the wind aspect here. Does wind energy need Badger Coulee to further disperse wind energy throughout a larger grid? what percentage of energy, if Badger Coulee was built, would be wind? Are those fair questions? I noticed you brought a graphic here,
right,
if you want to explain it now.
Sure. So a couple of things, Steve. First, I think as Dan has already kind of talked about, we have a regional energy market for our wholesale energy. That's an important context for your viewers to understand, that the utilities can access lower cost of wholesale power. We can't make them take it, but the market provides options for them to look at different resources and mm-hmm. select different resources. Wind energy and solar that's coming is part of that mix. And because when you're a wind developer, you need certain things. You need a good wind resource, you need somebody to purchase your power, you need transmission, you need land, you need a number of things to do a wind project. Again, we have a market for renewables, and so some is going to get done in the state of Wisconsin, and we've worked really hard to make sure the policy groundwork is laid for renewables in Wisconsin. There are certain political realities in Wisconsin mm-hmm. that dictate what kind of policy gets set in the various states, but there's no secret that wind is being developed in the upper Midwest in general, and that wind needs to interconnect and deliver to where the electrons want to flow. Badger Coulee is part of the overall portfolio, as the graphic that I provided shows. The planning that was done has wind zones throughout the whole portfolio. And so the ellipses on the map are the wind zones, and then you can see the transmission portfolio, so you can see how those two intersect.
Let me, a quick follow-up question. What growth in wind energy do you anticipate in the upper Midwest, which is the area covered by your graphic, over the next 5 or 10 years? A quick follow-up, and then I think Rob had a follow-up.
Sure. We have seen really exponential growth since about 2007, and with the draft carbon rule that came out this morning from the EPA, we expect that efficiency is going to be a big winner from that, as well as renewables. And so depending on how much a state has already done, there's going to be a piece on top that has to be done over the next 10 years or so. Just for context, the Midwest currently has renewable portfolio standards in place that require about 25,000 megawatts to be complete and for utilities to meet those requirements. We're at about 13,000 megawatts right now. So we've got half to do yet, and we can't do that without additional transmission.
Maybe this is too simple a question because I know very little about the subject. What percentage of energy on Badger Coulee would come from wind? Is there a number?
Yeah, it's a little hard to actually quantify, you know, the electrons. Once you hook something up, it flows where it wants to. That's where you have to look at the public policy drivers. Dan mentioned, for instance, or I think it was Deb, North Dakota, who's wanted to do another coal plant for a long time. There's no market for coal power, so they haven't been able to develop a new coal plant. There is market for wind. So you add up all the renewable policy drivers, the lack of market for coal, and say it's more likely than not, when you add up all the factors, that what's going to be flowing on these transmission lines is renewables. And there's another important factor. The coal plants that we have in the upper Midwest today are not transmission constrained. They can, their power can flow already. So they don't need Badger Coulee. Renewables needs Badger Coulee.
Okay. Sure, Rob.
This is a topic where we really need to move beyond the pictures of the wind turbines, and we need to get into much more detail about what the accountability benefits are going to be. And with environmental projects, basically, as Deb said, the only real measurable are net carbon emission reductions. Solar Wisconsin feels that Badger Coulee would definitely hurt or hold back in all investment in renewable energy in state in Wisconsin. We're already spending more than 50% of our renewable energy dollars in Wisconsin on existing transmission lines, existing interstate transmission lines. If we add more, that will speed up the opportunity to export our dollars from the state. The best way, the most proven way to guarantee maximum economic and environmental benefits from renewable energy investment is to cut out the middleman. That's like our focus on energy rebate program for solar arrays. It says, okay, you're buying the project, you're putting it in your yard, and when you put that up, that array, that grid-tied array, actually blocks the use of grid-tied carbon-laden energy running your house. It also reduces the strain from the internet, from the existing robust transmission system that we already have, and it returns the investment to that homeowner in the most cost-effective way possible by paying that landowner the full retail rate for that power. Okay, when we look at remote renewable energy, all of those benefits are greatly watered down. And we jump ahead. We asked to look at the Public Service Commission has asked the utilities what are the net carbon emission reductions before and after Badger Coulee. And Midwest ISO replied with a chart for the years 2020 and 2026. They say that if between 2020 and 2026, carbon emission would increase in the ATC footprint 3.1 on average, 3.1% per year. Okay, if you add Badger Coulee to the mix, it would still increase at 2.6 to 2.8% per year across all six energy futures that they've studied, including one that has a maximal wind build out and would require a national renewable energy requirement. So if you're an environmentalist and you're looking at that wind turbine and your idea is addressing, you know, carbon emissions or whatever, you probably don't have in mind a project that's going to allow carbon emissions to continue growing.
My next subject is costs and who pays it, but I want to give anybody who wants to, as a follow-up on what Rob just said.
One important consideration is solar energy produces across the peak of the day. It's a fairly narrow window when it's really at its strongest. And the Badger Coulee line is about accessing resources across all hours of the day. It's about the energy delivered, not necessarily the peak demand capability.
Okay. Thank you. Quickly, Deb.
Yeah, I agree with the whole team that we need reliability and we need carbon reduction. But we do have local resources here in Wisconsin. We can produce four times the energy we need in the state with our own onshore wind resources. We've got solar. We've got methane digesters. What we haven't addressed is that no matter how you cut it, fossil fuels or renewables, when you transmit centrally generated electricity to distant load centers, that is the most significant national security risk that we have, and it's the most significant risk that exists for our economy. And that cannot be addressed until you look at a downsized grid, be it called a right-sized grid or a microgrid. And Badger Coulee enables centralization, which needs to be addressed.
Thank you. I have two more subjects I want to cover. The next one is cost. Estimated cost from ACT, $540 million to $580 million. Who will pay it? And I want to start the discussion with, again, a summary from the Center for Rural Affairs. The vast majority, that's their term, not mine, would be paid on a cost-share basis by ratepayers throughout, here I go, MISO, Midwest Independent System Operator there, 11 states and parts of Canada. Here's a question. Is it going to raise my monthly check that I write to Alliant Energy? How's that for a basic? Okay, cost. Who's going to pay?
I'll go. Sarah, you go.
Okay. When we look at who pays, there are different ways for different projects. So as has been mentioned before, these MVP projects, multi-value projects. So the description you had, which is accurate, talks about multi-value projects being spread over the region, which is going to benefit them. So Badger Coulee benefits more than Wisconsin.
Define region.
Sure. So region, I mean MISO. So these 11 states and one Canadian province. There's benefits beyond Wisconsin. So therefore, ratepayers beyond Wisconsin are going to help pay for it. And what that means is for Wisconsin ratepayers, they will be paying approximately 11% of the project cost. The balance is paid by other surrounding states. Likewise, other MVP projects, Wisconsin will pay part for them as well. So it's on these regional-based projects, the idea is those who benefit should help contribute to the cost. Other more local reliability projects are spread more narrowly within Wisconsin. So to answer your question on your bill, less than 1%.
Okay.
And that's it's a very, very small margin when you break it down to an individual level like that. So it's not likely to be anything that you're going to notice. When you get your bill from your energy provider, transmission makes up a very small portion of that. The vast majority of what you pay to your energy provider is for their fuel cost and their generation and transmission, or distribution, excuse me. And then transmission is part of that, but it's a pretty small part, so we're affecting that small portion of your bill.
Did you have a PS rep? Quick, because I've got a lot more stuff.
Okay, well, basically, what Sarah replied to is basically a potential return on just the Badger Coulee project. Our big problem is that we need to do energy planning. And this is a whole new energy direction for Wisconsin. We have to understand the collective cost of this entire, because we can go, it's a lot of money that we could apply to all these wonderful decentralized proposals. The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin asked, along with the municipalities in Wisconsin and now legislators have asked, please tell us what these collective costs will be. Finally, the Midwest ISO replied with this very interesting payment chart about ATC's footprint, but it includes all of the NVP lines. So when it comes to, they didn't answer the question, but when you take all of those numbers and you add the 12% guaranteed return over the 40-year mortgage period of all of those things, and you divide that up to the ratepayers of Wisconsin, you come up with a very significant figure, over $4 billion. And you divide those out amongst the ratepayers in Wisconsin, you will not end up with something anywhere close to 1%. And there are additional lines in there that are not even discussed. Those other four or five other lines in Wisconsin that are not NVP lines.
Devin, Rob, I hear you saying you're a little bit more concerned with PSC than ATC and Excel, right?
Absolutely.
Are you worried about the process then?
Absolutely. We just went through a situation where CapEx 2020, which is the line that starts in North Dakota and ends in La Crosse, that Badger Coulee would hope to plug into. And relevant new information was discovered. And we presented the information to the Public Service Commission to consider, because we really felt it proved that there was absolutely no need for CapEx 2020. And they chose to ignore the citizens' request. That type of response does not leave a lot of faith within the system.
But I think it's fair to point out that the new information that came forward was after the commission had already made a decision in the docket.
Okay.
So you can plan and plan and plan, and new information comes along all the time. A process that looks at the public good has to have a start point and an end point. You can't keep opening a record, again and again and again for new information, because then they would never make a decision.
That's correct to a point, but one of the decisions was something that Xcel Energy should have known. In the decision to approve CapEx 2020, the Public Service Commission said that if Xcel Energy were to spend $1.9 million to upgrade one of their peaking stations in La Crosse to address the peak load, which Sarah had mentioned, that would defer the need for the project. Shortly after the docket was closed, Xcel Energy filed in Minnesota an integrated resource plan, which Wisconsin no longer does, showing that they were going to upgrade and reopen that project. If you're talking about spending $1.9 million versus $220 million and taking eminent domain and denigrating property when there are less destructive and less costly means, I think at some point, especially when the primary damage had not occurred in crossing the Mississippi River, at some point the Public Service Commission really does owe it to the citizens and ratepayers to take a look at that information.
While we're talking about money, Excel is going to pay, according to, again, my Center for Rural Affairs, paid $9.3 million to areas impacted by the line. Do you want to talk about the compensation, Dan?
Yeah, I'll cover that real quick. First, I want to touch on the CapEx 2020
please do.
Issue.
And then we got to turn to the process.
The issue gets to whether using a single generator is an appropriate replacement for a transmission line. And the generator in question is a plant located on French Island in the La Crosse area. Mm-hmm. And it's an older plant that isn't as reliable, and the benefits of the transmission being brought in provide a more consistent, more steady, more reliable source of energy for the La Crosse area. And what we showed in the docket is the extent to which the La Crosse area has grown over the last 10 years, even right through the recession and everything. So that's an important consideration, that one centrally located generator does not necessarily replace the reliability of a transmission line.
Now, do you and Sarah want to talk about the compensation?
On the compensation, I think I'll have Sarah do that.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
There's a couple different means of compensation for projects like this. On an individual basis, landowners who will have either a pole or wires overhead across their property are compensated for that through an easement negotiation process. And there's very strict state statutes that guide how that process has to take place. But the compensation that was mentioned by the Center for Rural Affairs is referring to environmental impact payments. That is something that was put into law by the legislature specifically for 345 kV projects in Wisconsin. So it was looked at along with some other policy decisions in terms of routing and siting in a bill that said, we need some major transmission infrastructure investment in Wisconsin. Yes, we're going to acknowledge that there's some impact to communities when this happens, and therefore we're going to require that the utilities who build these projects, 345 kV and above, make compensation. It's equated to about 5% of the transmission line cost, the project cost, and gets distributed by a statutory formula to cities, villages, towns, and counties who are affected by the project.
Okay. Real quickly, Rob, because we're almost out of time.
I just want to point out that these compensations are paid for by the ratepayers of Wisconsin, and also that the $9.3 million divided among 11 counties is less than $1 million, a one-time payment for the actual costs that are involved. And I can think of about three or four housing and business development projects right now that are basically on hold because of these proposals, because they do not want to build in these environments. So right there, we've taken up the $11 million.
The final subject that we have to get to because of time constraints is a timeline in the process. Last week, Wisconsin and I went to what's called a scoping session, a Q&A session, and we interviewed Nathan Conrad, the Chief Public Information Officer for the Public Service Commission. So this is a good time for all of us. It's only a minute interview with Nathan, so let's listen to that.
My name is Nathan Conrad. I'm the Communications Director for the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. This is the first of a session of scoping sessions regarding the proposed Badger Cooley line that would be potentially running from the La Crosse area to Madison. We will be having these scoping sessions through June 10th in order to bring public comment in and have members of the proposed areas ask questions about what may or may not be happening in their area. We're pretty early in the process. The application just came through and was deemed complete by staff members here at the Public Service Commission. We are now in the early stages. These scoping sessions lead into the environmental impact statements. Once those are finished, there's some potential for public comment on those draft and then finalized environmental impact statements. The next phase is the real phase where a lot of public comment can come in. That's the public testimony, public hearings, and technical hearings, where members of the public can come in, make sure that their thoughts and interest in the project can be deemed and part of the record. The record is what the commissioners base their decisions upon, and that'll probably be happening in late fall, early winter. I mean, a case like this is rather large. I would be surprised if it wasn't to be slightly contested throughout it. There's a lot of members of the public who have different views on whether or not this line is necessary, and so we want everybody to become involved by coming to the public hearings and making their voices heard.
Well, just your thoughts on the timeline and the process. Now, in connection with this, we're going to show this graphic that shows a projected decision-making timeline, a construction timeline, 2016, line in service, 2018. Again, there's a lot of ifs there. I can see that. So what do people need to know about how they can get involved, their next steps? Rob?
I would like to add to Nathan's comments that this is very important for ratepayers of Wisconsin to understand that this is our first real opportunity to have input that is public record in this entire process. All of the letters that were written to ATC asking questions that were not responded to, all of the input that has been given through all of the open houses, that all exists on a CD someplace in a drawer at the Public Service Commission, and it will not be put online for ratepayers and our elected representatives to access. Okay, so ATC and Xcel have spent a lot of our money developing what they consider to be are all the concerns that need to be considered for the high voltage transmission option. All right? None of that that we have said up to this point exists in the record, and this is our first and real opportunity to show up to these scoping meetings to spell out, we live in these communities, we can spell out much better what our concerns are than the third party people that have been hired. There are three opportunities, there are three ways to do that. One is you can go to the scoping meeting and you can use a form. It doesn't say much what you should supply. So look at the front door, see if there's not a Soul of Wisconsin representative there to give you suggestions and information about how to make that input effective. You have to list sensitivities, you have to say where they are. The other way is that you can go online and you can make comments online, but you can't attach maps, you can't do photos and things like that. And the third way, it's very important, and he didn't talk about this, is that the scoping process extends all the way to July 15th, and it has to be in writing. You can go to the meetings and you can talk and you can express your emotions and so forth. That won't make a difference. What will make a difference is what you list as your sensitivities and where they're located.
Some next steps are the environmental impact statement and what comes after that. Can somebody walk me through a little bit more of the process in detail?
Yes, and you're very right, Steve. Environmental impact statement and the scoping sessions help inform that environmental impact statement, which will be written with collaboration between Public Service Commission, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, all get involved in writing that. After that, there will be a draft of that EIS, and people can read the draft and provide comments. So if they think there's something that was missed or not covered right, the public can provide comment to that before it's finalized. Most importantly, there will be public hearings, and we encourage anybody concerned about the project to go and become involved. Dates are not set yet. They will be set by the Public Service Commission, but there will be both public and technical hearings. The technical hearings will be the applicants, ATC and Xcel, and other interested parties who have intervened in the case. Mm-hmm. But the public hearings are for anybody to come and say on the record whatever it is they feel about the project, whatever it is they want the commission to consider. And one correction I do have to make, all of the public comments we've received are public. They are available. They are part of the record because they are part of our application, which gets entered into the record through the hearings. And they are also available at all of the public libraries. That's one of the commission's requirements. When we file our application, we have to file copies with public libraries. And those CDs, because there's a volume, a tremendous volume of comments we received and used in the routing process. So for efficiency's sake, they are there. But they're available to the public at public libraries.
Well, wrapping it up, is there a timeline by which PSC has to make a decision?
Yeah, the PSC has 180 days with an option to extend from the date they determined the application was complete, which I believe occurred on April 30th. Okay. So that gives them roughly till the end of April of next year to complete their process.
Okay. Well, end of the show, I'd like your thoughts on what individuals who are interested in this project, the next steps they might take, just your brief responses. Dan, you want to go first?
Well, first off, we thank you again for having us here. We strongly encourage everyone to get involved who has an opinion, whether it's about the line or whether it's about the energy usage in Wisconsin or whatever their opinion is. We value those opinions. We want to hear them, and they need to be part of the process in order for the PSC to have to make an informed decision.
Thank you. Deb?
Again, we also thank you for covering this topic. I think CapEx 2020 got past us because there was so little media focus on the issues. We encourage people to get involved in the scoping processes and Citizens Energy Task Force. Our website will stay current with information, so please go to cetf.us.
Thank you. And Beth?
Thank you, Steve. We certainly will be participating in the case, and we encourage anyone who wants a renewable energy future in the Midwest to support the line. Even if it's a distributed future, at some point you need transmission because you need to actually have the system hang together, and you need a certain amount of wire in the air to be able to transmit electrons back and forth. So we've got our windonthewires.org website. We will be doing media work, and this line is important for Wisconsin and its renewable energy future.
Thanks, Ben.
I encourage everyone that's interested in whether it's saving money or renewable energy, whatever your personal or your community energy goals are, to take part in this. Because as Deb points out, other states do this integrated resource planning, where we take benefits that would come to users and put them on the same table with the proposals that the utilities are make, where the benefits flow the other way. In Wisconsin, if you're interested in energy efficiency, if you're interested in renewable energy, if you're interested in carbon emissions, if you're interested in what your community can do to become more self-sufficient, there is no other opportunity for you to have those things weighed at the same time then accept a major utility review case like this. So, you know, it may seem like it's a transmission line. That's because of the way it's been proposed. It's not a transmission line. It's an energy decision that's a key one for the state of Wisconsin. And if you're interested in any of these things, get educated about what the options are for this proposal and participate the next year.
Thanks, Rob. Sarah?
Well, thanks, Steve. I think you found one thing we all agree on, which is we want people to be involved.
Yes.
No matter what their opinion on the project, everybody has an opportunity to weigh in with the Public Service Commission. And in the end, they are the decider of this case. I would also add, for some of the discussion we had today, which goes beyond Badger Coulee to more regional planning, other alternatives, people can be involved and read the Public Service Commission's Strategic Energy Assessment. Good resource for people who want that bigger background outside of just this one project. And also, there's a tremendous amount of information about the project on our website, atcllc.com.
Well, thank you so much. It's a very important project. It's the distance, 150 or potentially 170 miles. $540 million to $580 million, we all have a stake in it, so I want to thank you very much. And just a note, Wisconsin Eye is going to list the rest of the scoping sessions. Those are Q&A sessions where you can get more information on the Badger Coulee line. We're going to list that. And again, thank you all so very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.